Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Anna Sales, sitting in for Brian Lehrer today. And as we've been hearing, anti-American protests spread to nearly 20 countries over the weekend as people reacted to a video which denigrates the Prophet Muhammad, which was produced in the United States. But how much of the anger is really anti-American? How much is it about the video itself? How much is about the bigger transitions happening in the Arab world right now? Joining now to explain is Stephen Cook. He's a senior fellow for Middle Eastern Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Welcome back to WNYC. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you.
So I want to start by looking at what the Obama administration's interpretation of this was over the weekend. The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, was on five of the Sunday talk shows yesterday, clearly making the rounds. Her statement was that these protests have been totally inspired by the anti-Muslim video, which was called The Innocence of Muslims. Here she is on Meet the Press.
This is a response to a hateful and offensive video that was widely disseminated throughout the Arab and Muslim world. Obviously, our view is that there is absolutely no excuse for violence and that what has happened is condemnable. But this is a spontaneous reaction to a video, and it's not dissimilar, but perhaps on a slightly larger scale than what we have seen in the past with the satanic verses, with the cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad.
Again, Susan Rice, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. Do we know that for certain, that this was absolutely a reaction to the video and not planned at all?
Well, I think that she's right in and of itself, her statement that this is a reaction to the video. But certainly people with political agendas in the region took advantage of this video, which had been disseminated for a particular purpose by those people with agendas, and it morphed into these region-wide protests at American embassies and diplomatic installations throughout the region. It's not just about this video. That's, I think, too neat, too pat of an explanation. You are able to bring as many people as you have out into the streets to protest the United States because of this video, as well as a region-wide narrative about foreign domination, and in particular about the role of the United States in the region, in particular over the course of the last decade, but even before then.
And listeners, we know there are a lot of calls about questions about what is happening with these protests. Our phone lines are open. Call in with your questions, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Listeners with connections to people in North Africa and the Middle East, we want to hear from you, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So, Stephen Cook, give me a bit of a tour of these protests. And are what we're seeing in Libya the same as what we're seeing in Cairo, the same as what we're seeing in Afghanistan? Are these protests all of a similar nature, or does it largely depend on what the political situation is in these countries in terms of the dynamics?
Well, I think that, again, the video is something that sparked these protests. So on the surface, the grievance is about an insult to the Prophet Islam, the Prophet Muhammad, and the Muslim religion. But by and large, in a place like Egypt or a place like Libya or Yemen, the politics are very different, and people are coming out into the streets for different reasons. In a place like Egypt, for example, people are drawn to protest in front of the U.S. embassy now in a more open political environment because the relationship between Egypt and the United States is not a very popular one. And this has provided them an excuse to vent their anger at what they perceive has been American predatory policies in Egypt. I know that sounds strange given the fact that the United States has invested some $70 billion in Egypt over the course of the last 30 years or so, but it's not seen as American altruism. It's seen as an American effort to prop up Egypt's dictators during those years.
Huh. So Egyptians are not looking to Americans as, helpful allies in liberating them at this point.
Well, I think that Egyptians admire the political institutions and ideals by which Americans like to believe we live here at home. What they're outraged by is the gap between those principles and political institutions and what they perceive to be Washington's conduct in the world, and in particular Washington's conduct in the Middle East and Washington's relationship with dictators in the Middle East, specifically in their case Hosni Mubarak. The United States has done wonderful things in Egypt. It's helped develop Egypt's infrastructure, contributed to Egypt's public health system, agricultural reforms, helped preserve Egypt's amazing antiquities. But that's not what was once the opposition, now revolutionary narrative about America's role in Egypt over the course of the last three decades.
And
it's been, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, we've been calling these protests anti-American protests. Are they really anti-Western protests? We had protests spread to the German and British embassies over the weekend.
I think they are. I think there's a larger issue here where Arabs and Muslims are using this video, this deep insult, an offense to their religion and their identity, as yet another in a long history of Western or foreign offenses against them and their identity and their religion, and in a more open political environment where leaders are elected, where people are struggling to build new political systems and a new society, and grappling with all of these identity issues, the movie precipitated these demonstrations. But it, again, not just about the movie.
Let's shift back to Libya. Libyan authorities have arrested some 50 people in connection with the attacks in which four Americans were killed, including the U.S. ambassador to Libya. But it seems like while the American position is that these were relatively spontaneous, they were a reaction to the video, what we're hearing from political leaders in Libya is that absolutely these were pre-planned. Why would they have a totally different read on what happened?
Well, I think the Libyans have an interest in demonstrating to the world that this was something that is, you know, part of an al-Qaeda-affiliated group that is largely alien to Libyan society. They were responding to this was a planned attack in response to a drone strike that killed an al-Qaeda leader who happens to be of Libyan origin. They have every reason, you know, to paint that picture, and it may very well have been the case. There's no, you know, publicly available evidence to suggest that that's absolutely not the case. It could have been a planned attack. It could very well have been a demonstration that this group took advantage of, sowed chaos and then took advantage of, or it could just have been one of these situations in which a demonstration got completely out of hand. Libya is just awash in weapons. And unfortunately, Ambassador Christopher Stevens and three other Americans were killed in the melee. But that's something that I think there's a real interest on the part, in particular, of the Libyans to portray it that way. In Egypt, for example, it's a little bit different. President Morsi has a much different political arena that he has to deal with, and he has a number of cross-cutting pressures from other Islamists, from remnants of the old regime that he has to navigate, and he has not been as strong in either condemning the protests in front of the embassy there or denouncing any of the violence.
Let's take a listen to how Libyan President Mohamed Magariaf described the attacks. This is an interview on Face the Nation yesterday. This is what he had to say.
It was planned, definitely it was planned by foreigners, by people who entered the country a few months ago. And they were planning this criminal act since their arrival.
So that's interesting. I mean, clearly he's talking about foreigners coming in, this being propagated from people outside of Libya, as you described. But when we look at both Libya and Egypt, can we also understand this as part of internal tensions between moderates and extremists?
Well, I think that there certainly is a dynamic situation in Egypt in particular where there is a struggle going on between the new leadership, the old leadership that is the remnants of the old regime. That's one set of problems. Then there is a dynamic discourse going on about who speaks for Islam in the country, whether it's the clerical establishment there from Al-Azhar University, whether it's the Muslim Brotherhood, which controls the government, whether it is Salafist elements who did very well in the parliamentary elections. So there are different groups who are competing with each other, and in this case, it was a race to the bottom to see who could demonstrate, nationalist bona fides, who could demonstrate anti-Americanism in a way. You know, there is one narrative, not to get too conspiratorial about it, that the Ministry of Interior in Egypt, along with some of these elements, the Salafist elements, staged this this protest, whipped up this protest in order to embarrass President Morsi, who had just hosted 100 American businessmen in Cairo the day before and was moving closer to a deal for the United States to relieve $1 billion worth of Egypt's budget, what it owed the United States, pardon me. So, there are many different political factions in all of these countries who are now vying in this more open political arena who have an interest in either embarrassing the current leaders, in whipping up anti-American sentiment to advance their own political agenda. And that is certainly part of the dynamic that we're seeing in the region, which suggests, again, the movie may have precipitated these protests, but there are political figures and leaders who want to advance their agenda who have helped this thing along.
Many competing narratives happening. We know you have a lot of questions, listeners, about exactly what is happening. We are taking your calls, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Jeremy in Manhattan, you lived in Jordan. You've been watching this news?
I have, yes.
And what do you make of it?
Well, I think there's kind of a fundamental part that people in the Arab world and people here in the United States are not really paying a particular amount of attention to that they should, and that is that in that part of the world, nothing gets published, nothing gets said publicly without the government condoning it, without the government allowing it to be published, and our system is obviously not like that. Part of what makes the anger over there so widespread is their lack of understanding that this could be published in the United States without government support. Likewise, I think part of the confusion on our side is that they blame the U.S. government for this instead of the people who produced the video. And I think a key to that is understanding that it is inconceivable, based on the system these folks have known for their whole lives, that such a video could be published without the support of the government.
Thanks so much, Jeremy. Stephen Cook, there was a lot of conversation over the weekend about that sort of clash in terms of understanding about the First Amendment in the U.S. versus what's acceptable in Arab culture, coming out of the idea that the video caused these protests. Do you think that having that conversation right now, are we missing the point by focusing on that, or do you think that that's really fundamentally what this is about, different worldviews, different expectations of the role of government in terms of what's acceptable?
I certainly think it's part of the problem. I don't think, though, the question is a question of Arab culture. I think it's a question of the fact that Arabs lived under authoritarian systems for many, many, many years, and the government censored and controlled everything that was broadcast or published. And as a result, they've come to believe that all governments have this power, and don't quite understand the free speech absolutism that we have here in the United States. I mean, certainly you can't yell fire in a crowded movie theater in the United States, but I don't think that this is analogous to that. I'm not sure it's as much a clash of cultures, although certainly there is a fundamental misunderstanding of how the way the American political system works. For all of our diplomatic and political engagement with that part of the world, Americans and people in the Arab world remain woefully, woefully ignorant of the way politics works and culture and society works in each other's places.
Ted and Ted, in Morristown, New Jersey, you have been talking with Egyptian friends over the weekend. How are they understanding this story? What do they think is going on here?
Well, I mean, the comment from the other gentleman is correct, except, you know, I think it's more general that there is an anti-American feeling, you know, I would say probably the majority of Egyptian, the majority of Muslim in the Arab world and Muslim world are, you know, heavy anti-American because of they feel that America is not a friend of the Muslim, of Islam. And that has to change, and this is not, you know, this can be changed by an enlightened foreign policy. And Obama is trying to do that, but it's kind of difficult to do that. At the same time, you have to try to please Israel the Arabs, and feel that the American policy is so biased towards Israel that they cannot get the Palestinian cannot get a fair treatment, and they blame America on the plight of the Palestinian Israel, in Palestine, or in West Bank, or in around the world. So I think this is the problem that I think is happening, and you need a change in, well, not a change. I mean, Obama is trying to do that, but it's kind of difficult to do that. At the same time, you have to please the Israeli and the Jewish lobby. So it's but certainly he can do better that job than Romney could do that.
Well, thank you so much, Ted, in Morristown, New Jersey. We've got time for one more question. Joel from Dobbs Ferry, New York, what are you wondering about?
Hi, thank you so much for this great show and this very, very interesting discussion. I have relatives who are currently tourists in Morocco, and we hear virtually nothing, about the status of these issues in Morocco, while the rest of northern Africa and some of southern Africa is blowing up. What's going on in Morocco?
Stephen Cook, what's going on in Morocco?
Well, there are people who know more about Morocco's internal politics than I do, but my sense is that there is a fair amount of opposition to this movie in the West in Morocco. But a lot of the unhappiness in Morocco is directed more towards Europe, given Morocco's long-time French domination of Morocco. And we also can't discount the fact that the Moroccan security services, recognizing how important tourism is to Morocco, have done a better job than they have in other places. Certainly, King Mohammed VI has every interest in portraying himself as a reformer, as outward-looking, and does not want these types of images emerging from the country.
And quickly, one more question. With the UN General Assembly opening this week in New York City, do you think this is going to come to New York? Are we going to hear much about these protests in the coming days?
Well, I certainly think that leaders from that part of the world will take an opportunity to raise these issues, if only to play to a domestic audience. That here, you know, are there leaders in the United States speaking about this grave affront to Muslim identity and the Prophet Muhammad and Islam more generally in the United States in the World Forum of the UN General Assembly.
Stephen Cook with the Council on Foreign Relations, thank you so much for talking us through this. I expect we'll be calling you back soon to answer more questions as we figure out all the dynamics at play here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
After the break, we take a break from foreign policy to just listen and listen to how we listen. A conversation about how your brain works while you're hearing things. It's The Brian Lehrer Show.